Hey, Jason, we got some guests with us today. We're going to start this podcast off a little different. We'll actually introduce our guests this time. Normally, we just start talking. We were already making fun of their names.
First one's Buddy Woodbury. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Yeah,
exactly. It's been a minute.
My name is Buddy Woodbury.
I work in the outdoor industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to work. Unfortunately, I got to work today. You guys do a podcast. So we got Joe Scott and Zach Hoheisel. Is that correct?
Hoheisel.
Yep. Yep.
I gave up trying to spell Hoheisel. I got to H-O and I stopped writing. I'm like, well, give up here. You guys are with Alpha Dog Nutrition. And yep. We've got some excited news to announce on that. We're going to start carrying your products, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, but that's I don't want to jump into that yet. So,
sure.
And then, Jason, you want to introduce yourself to the class?
Yeah, my name is Jason Duby. I'm semi-regular. What else do you want me to introduce myself as? I'm here all the freaking time, man.
You're supposed to be here more than me, so I can go on.
I am.
Cool. So you guys, where are you guys out of?
Yeah, so we're out of Neenah, Wisconsin, so not far from Green Bay, over in the Appleton area. So we've bounced around quite a bit over the last 3 years. We've been growing pretty fast. We're pretty sick of moving at this point, but we've had to move to a new building every year the last 3 years because we've been outgrowing the old ones. So, but right now we're in Neenah.
You start in a garage?
I did. Yeah. Yep. I was just looking at pictures of that this morning, actually. August of 21, we were, I got a picture of my son climbing on all the boxes out in the garage and helping me pack out orders and all that good stuff. So come a long ways.
Yeah. Yeah. We started, and we didn't even have a garage. We had a room that used to be a garage that we converted. They converted to a bedroom. And when W started, that was where we started with, was like we had a small house and they had it was like an 1100 square foot house with the garage. It was like 900. And then there was a garage. It was an attached garage. And the people before us had already converted the garage over, but they did like a kind of a shitty job. And so we raised the floor and made it all even and level. And, so, I mean, just a small little single car garage is where W started with. And then we moved to a single detached garage. We took over the garage that was detached. And then
in the blue shop.
Yeah. Then that was my Craigslist find for $1,500. I bought a shop.
Wow.
Already assembled once. And the county
assembled.
Yeah. The problem with the guy, he's like, yeah, they didn't have the permits or something. So I bought it on Craigslist. No instructions. Just it was like a puzzle. We're sitting there putting shit together. Me, Dan, and my dad, and Mike poured the slab, and we ran out of that for a long time. It was like a 24 by 36 shop, and now we're in town. Okay. I definitely and actually we're expanding. My phone was buzzing from the agent to lease up two more spots next to us. So they're wanting me to sign some papers so we can expand. So I know the struggle.
Yeah. It's growing. It's a fun stage. I don't know. I like the grind. It's definitely nice when you finally kind of step out of it a little bit, but it's fun kind of starting from ground level and working your way up. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what do you have, I already got questions, but like, you have equipment or like what?
Yeah. So when we first started, we were going through contract manufacturers because it didn't make sense to actually bring on the equipment. Mm-hmm. If we didn't really know it was going to go anywhere, because I had exactly zero people telling me this was a good idea.
And you still went with it. Like, yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah. One thing you'll learn about me, I don't listen very well. So started out with contract manufacturer and we're basically just doing the shipping ourselves. My background's in manufacturing engineering. And then I think what I'm actually really good at is finding people way smarter than me and kind of bringing them together to achieve a goal. So that was about 2 years ago. We brought all manufacturing in-house. We got really lucky with when COVID hit. We obviously did not know COVID was coming, and our manufacturer's lead times went from like 6 weeks to like 18, if you could get it then. And so while everyone else was running out of inventory, Zach and I were staying up way too late trying to get all the orders out the door and everything. But we timed that right. We brought manufacturing in-house like 3 weeks before everything shut down with COVID. So got pretty, I hesitate to say lucky because you got to put yourself in a position to be lucky, but we definitely we're pretty fortunate with the timing.
Sometimes that stuff, those things work out and you don't realize it. I built W, talking about COVID is a whole different thing, but back in the financial crash of like 2000, that 98, 99, 2000, there was really just a downturn in the economy and stuff. And I always tell people, I was like, we didn't know any better. So we were so small that we could grow through that section. Right. And so we kind of built the grassroots when, anybody that was around was feeling the pinch, and we kind of jumped in at the time where, going from $2,000 a monthly sales to $5,000 a monthly sales is a pretty easy, step. You know what I mean? When you get to the bigger numbers, when you start adding commas, it gets harder and harder to do those, 100X, doubling your numbers or whatever. But mentioning that COVID deal, sometimes those little things, I would consider it luck, the timing. You didn't do that because of, nobody knew of anything about COVID.
Right.
And that supply chain issue that hit us, everybody. I mean, it hit us bad.
Oh yeah.
Garmin, everybody got hit with that supply issue. So,
yep.
So positioning yourself to be there is good. What made you want to do that?
Background's in manufacturing engineering, so I kind of always envisioned eventually bringing it in-house. At some point, volume just kind of got to the point where, it made sense to bring the equipment in because contract manufacturers aren't cheap. So, it just gives us a lot more flexibility. Not to get too into the weeds here, but our money's not tied up for 10 weeks without being able to do anything with it because we put a bunch down for a deposit and all that stuff. I mean, we can turn stuff around pretty quick. We just have more control over the whole process, which is, it's been honestly probably the best decision we've ever made. And then we also have a second business where we contract manufacture for other brands. So that kind of helps us pay for the equipment and the building and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. So what, so before we get into the product, so it's Alpha Dog Nutrition, and most of it's all powder based, right? I mean,
yep. Yeah. For the vast majority of it, it's going to be like a powder based food topper. So you just sprinkle it on top of your dog's food. We do have one product that is a soft gel. It's krill oil. The reason it's in a soft gel is krill oil tastes absolutely terrible. So, it's super good for the dog.
You got to choke it down before you can taste it.
Yeah, exactly. So, if they're not going to eat it, it's not doing anyone any good. So that's in a soft gel. But everything else is beef liver flavored powder. Nice and easy, just single scoop on your dog's food and away you go.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about dogs before we get into the products there. You had Zach come on because, Zach, you did some hunting. You did some bear hunting.
Expert and houndsman.
Joe, right, you're into labs, like waterfowl?
Yeah, I grew up in the uplands space, and then we always had English setters growing up, and then the last couple of years, kids happen, you just don't get a chance to get up north quite as much, so started getting into more waterfowl hunting and stuff like that. Can kind of sneak out before work and hopefully shoot a limit and be back in the office or back home before everyone even wakes up, so Yeah.
Right on. And Zach, you have dogs?
Yeah, same for me. I grew up with labs my whole life. I got two labs of my own. I'm into, I do as much as I can with them, like shed hunting, waterfowl hunting, upland hunting. My older dog, Harley, is actually a guide dog out at a pheasant club. But I've always really liked dog training and being around dogs. So when I had to wait, I started applying for points in Wisconsin when I was 12. So I probably could have drawn when I was after 10 or 11 years, but I was like just getting out of college and I wanted to make sure if I actually pulled the tag, I'd be able to go on a hunt. So when I finally did draw a kill tag, I really wanted to do it with hounds because I'd done some coyote hunting in the past with hounds. And I really like the team aspect of it. And, you know, anything, if I can hunt without a dog or with a dog, I'm always going to choose the route that has a dog involved. So that was my first experience. And I've been going back once or twice a year with that same group of guys ever since. And definitely, like, I'm also a big game hunter. Like, I like bow hunting for deer and stuff like that. But most of my bucket lists hunts include, I'd like to kill a cat out west. I'd like to get a lynx. It just kind of opened up a whole new world for me, that whole hound side of things. I really appreciate it and have enjoyed getting to learn more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of guys have done lynx this year. I mean, lynx was a popular.
Yeah.
It would kind of like open the doors, especially over here. BC is where you got to go for lynx hunt and stuff, but shoot, man, it seems like several guys did the lynx hunt this year. So
how did you, I mean, what kind of got you attracted to hounds and Zach? I mean, just you stumbled across them or you knew somebody that had dogs and got invited?
I mean, Where the Red Fern Grows is my favorite book growing legit. Up. You know, it's just, and like I said, just anything with a dog I've always appreciated. We did have some friends. I got a friend that lives about an hour from here that I've done some coon hunting and coyote hunting with. I thought that was really cool. It's actually kind of a crazy story how I got involved with the group of guys that I now go with year after year. Is my dad drew a tag, I want to say 2 or 3 years before me. And he went with a group of guys that that same buddy that I do some coyote and coon hunting with. He knew a guy that he coyote hunted with that ran bear with this other group. And that gentleman's name was Minnow, or nickname was Minnow.
Jeremy.
My dad. What's that?
Fisher? Jeremy?
Could have been, to be honest. I don't know. Yeah. I just know his nickname was Minnow.
Okay, yeah.
So
that's all you know.
Yeah, but
call names.
Yeah, he was our only contact, and I really wanted to go with the same group of guys that my dad went with, and because he said they were a great group of guys, super blue collar, like just a fun group to be around, and they had good dogs, and I couldn't get a hold of them, like just didn't have any contact information. So like a month before the season opened, the year I hunted, bears went first, dogs went first for bear hunting. And like a month before, I just made this last ditch effort on like a Facebook hound hunting page. Like, hey, are there any groups that have spots open? And the first person to comment on it, I recognized his name from my dad and saw his Can-Am, John Lobner, as a gentleman commented on my post. And come to find out, he was the group my dad went with. So I got to end up going with those guys. In the end, even though it took a while, but it was really fun. And they run all plot hounds, and it was definitely a super, super fun hunt.
Yeah. So if you're talking, I'm pretty sure you're talking about Jeremy, right? It would be Jeremy Fisher. Who, I mean, did he pass away or did you not? I mean,
he passed away. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that guy. He was a board member for WBHA. We all used to BS and.
Yeah, so I do know
that name. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I. Okay. The same person then. Yeah. Like I said, he passed away. I don't know. It must have been 4 years ago.
About. Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a sad day. He was a really good customer. And I'm one of the guys that I'd always sit and BS with in WBHA when we go to Wisconsin. So,
yeah. You live in the right state to get hooked up with guys for sure. Like there's a lot of good bear hunters and they're really great stewards of the sport.
That's something that I thought that was so cool about it. Like, so going in, I made a whole video about the thing, but like going in, I was kind of didn't know exactly what to expect. Cause you hear some, you know, stereotypes just like there are for every brand of hunter, you know, but, sure. I was like thinking to myself, like, you know, the lab guys, we put a lot of work into our dogs. We train daily, you know, or we try to anyway, but these guys, it's like a whole entire lifestyle for them. And you go up to the Chequamegon National Forest and there's guys that have, you know, dedicated bear trucks with boxes and a whole pack of dogs. And they're, you know, the guys I go with, the majority of the group runs every single day through training season and kill season, regardless of if they have a tag or not. So to invest that much like time and money and gas, you know, just to get your dogs a run was, it's like these guys like live and breathe this. It's not just a little hobby for them or something they do on the weekends. They are like, their life revolves around it. It was really cool to see.
It's funny you mentioned the truck. Like that's been my joke for a lot of years. If you're on dogs, you got two trucks. You got the good truck and the hunting truck.
Yeah.
You know, because you beat that hunting truck.
Yeah.
I was going to, you're talking about stereotypes and stuff and the Red Fern Grows, you know, that book. Mm-hmm. So my daughter doing that book in my daughter's class, you know, she's six.
And you're volunteering? 17.
No, I'm not volunteering. So the teacher stops the book or the video they're watching and goes, just so you guys know, hounds would never let you pet them. I'm like, my daughter's sitting there going like,
that's why you should get involved, buddy.
Yeah.
Show up to school.
My daughter's too shy to even raise her hand, but she's like the teacher's credibility just went down a couple notches in my daughter's eye, right? My daughter used to defend teachers, right? Because I'd be like, you know, then COVID, you're talking about COVID and all that stuff, you know, all the BS that went on in school and masks and whatever. And I'm always like political and, you know, teachers, blah, blah, blah. And she's always kind of defending them. Like, well, they said this or they said that, you know what I mean? And so anyways, I was chalk one up for Team W. Whenever that teacher come in and talked about how hounds wouldn't let you pet them. She's like,
as she actually, there's three of them one.
Sleep in my bed right now. You know what I mean? They sleep with me.
So, right.
Oh, I had to, when you mentioned Red Fern Grows, I was like, oh, I got to write that down. Like, I forgot about that. That's cool. And you do some camera, video camera, like
videography.
I'm the creative for Alpha Dog. So, the vast majority of like the photos and videos you see online and stuff, that's my main role here. In the beginning, it was a mix of doing camera work, and Joe and I were a small team at first. So I definitely did a lot of the putting stuff in boxes and all that. But now we've grown so much. I'm pretty lucky. I get to mainly focus on the creative stuff, and that's been my passion forever. So it kind of lined up perfectly when Joe and I started out as hunting buddies, and it just kind of, I guess one day Joe thought it would make sense to bring me on to help do some of the marketing. So
I want that job. You
just say yes.
What's that?
He was the only guy I could get to say yes.
Sounds like a deal. You need another guy to just drive around, hunt, and take pictures? I could probably try and figure something out myself.
He'll go work for you.
Zach's been great to add to the team. We were joking before we hit record here that, you know, the podcast stuff, I always kind of dread it, and then we get going, and it's actually a pretty good time. I hate being on camera. My first ever hire was a camera guy, so... it's just one of those things, but it's been great having Zach on board. He's pretty good at what he does.
Yeah. So how did you get into the cameras and videography? And
I just loved hunting. Like I went on my first archery hunt when I was four. I shot my first turkey when I was six. Like, it's just, I never really cared about, I ended up getting into sports later on in life, but I never cared about cartoons or anything. I always just wanted to hunt. And my parents had there's a lot of kids that like to hunt, but they're like, you were obsessed ever since you were four. And I just was like, I can't envision doing anything other than hunting for the rest of my life. I better find out a way to make some money doing it. So in high school, I had the bright idea, like, oh, I'll just start a TV show. That can't be that hard. knew nothing about camera gear, knew nothing about business, anything. And I just picked up a camera and started filming my hunts and stuff. And because of how much I loved hunting, and I've also never been creative. Like, I hated art class. I'm probably like the only person to ever get a D in art class. Cause like, all you have to do is try. And I couldn't even do that.
I was right there, D plus or D minus. I don't remember which, but
yeah. But when it came to filming hunts, I just like fell in love with it. So then naturally I was like, well, how can I get better at doing this? And, you know, the gear started getting better. I started investing more money and time into it. And I got halfway decent at telling stories and taking decent pictures and videos. And that led to some other career opportunities. And I always knew I wanted to like find a way to get back to where it was like mostly revolved around hunting. And that's kind of when Joe came in, we were out filming just a personal, I think it was a teal hunt. We were out early season teal hunting. And Joe said, you know what, why don't you come and do this full time for me? So.
Yeah. So he took you hunting, buttered you up, and then offered you a job doing what he hates doing. Yeah. Right? Like, that's the summary.
You're not wrong. Yeah. Like that. You're not wrong.
That's a good way to do it, man.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed your bear hunt video. I always watch those, and I think the hardest part for me would be like when you're sitting in front of the camera narrating, you know, telling your story. That, like, to me, I'm horrible. My wife hates the fact that I don't take pictures, especially now given our other ventures. Like, I need to take more photos and videos, but I don't think about it when you're handling the dogs. Yeah. And Zach, like, you're in a really great position because you're not personally dealing with it. You know, you're assisting. Mm-hmm. But like when it's your dogs out there, and it's very different, and you kind of forget everything else. I mean, we had a four fox night, and I think I took two pictures. You know, you just don't think about it. But you guys get to catch such a different perspective while still being entwined in it. You know, I enjoyed the video, but God, sitting in front of that camera and just talking, people don't see my face on a podcast. I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, that's what I like about it too. And I mean, like the first year, I mean, I helped out a little bit where I could, but I didn't know much. And now I've gotten more involved and they trust me a little bit more. I definitely get to help out more and actually be a bigger part of the hunt or the chase or whatever we're doing that weekend. But it's nice to be at least somewhat removed. Like, I make a rule for myself. If I'm training my own dog, even as a photographer, I never take photos. That's why I like have hardly any pictures of my dogs. Because you can't focus on two things at once. Yeah. At least when I train, I can't. So it's nice to get to document it. I've done a couple videos. One was my hunt. One was a training season hunt. And then last year was more of that was a difficult weekend of hunting. So I kind of just tried to do like a shorter video, like a day in the life type of deal. And I liked the way that one turned out, but it's fascinating to me. Like, waking up that early and like you walk, we turn the light on and the hound, they have all the hounds out on the back hill and the place just erupts. Like, every dog is just like, do I get to run today? Do I get to run today? And go out early, check the cameras. And I just like bear, like seeing bear in general. So I have an absolute blast telling those stories.
When you're watching those dogs, what was your favorite dog? And like, did you notice a dog, a specific dog or a type of dog or something different in some of those dogs?
That's something that was like, I had a lot of questions about, because when you're watching like labs work a field, whether it's upland hunting or duck hunting, it's all like you're actually getting to see the dog work pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
That is a lot. You're watching, you know, the screen. There's a dog named Chaos, and his energy was just higher than all the other dogs. He's the first dog out of the truck every single time. He was like a good cold tracking dog, a good jump dog, and a good bay dog. Like, he was kind of the jack of all trades. And he was just like their top dog. Yeah. And then he had a son, it'd be Chaos, and I'm going to forget his name. It's something similar to Chaos. Another term, which I can't imagine naming a lab Chaos. I feel like that would just be a recipe for disaster. But
I've seen some labs that it should have been named Chaos, probably.
Yeah,
careful what you name them.
Yeah,
Oh, Havoc. That was his name. Chaos and Havoc. Those are the two top dogs. And I just, in terms of what you want in a bear dog, they, you know, had their out. They first ones out, good cold tracking. They got good feet. They're the first ones to the tree every time. And they don't, you know, when some of the other dogs will bail off and switch or get lost, those two generally are the ones you got to. They're also the most annoying because when you want to give up, you got to go in after them because they're not going to quit. But
got to get them.
Yeah.
That's just what I noticed as someone who, you know, I don't know exactly what to look for. You know, I've only been doing it for 3 years now and, you know, two times a year at most. But that's what I saw.
And one of the big things that is kind of different, and you probably recognize this pretty early, was you don't get to watch our dogs work a lot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You got to hear them. You know what I mean? But it's like you're listening. We do so much training and just listening. And with Garmin now, you watch the screen a little bit more than I would prefer sometimes. But listening to those dogs and hearing what they're telling you through their barks and their voice, I can imagine, especially somebody not coming into that, not being around that very enough. That's probably challenging to be like, what are they doing now? What are they doing now? You know what I mean? Everybody's sitting around and they got a game plan. They know what's going on. And you're mm-hmm. the new guy. You're like, where are they at? You know, and you're all anxious and excited. Like, are we going to catch this one or what's going to happen? I mean, the first couple of hunts, I'm sure were there was a type of experience there that you didn't expect.
Yeah, it definitely. So I've gotten a lot better at all just like simple terms and understanding the barks. That's another thing I liked about those two dogs the most is they had they're pretty quiet until they jump and then they start barking really, really loud, both of them.
Yeah.
But on my first hunt, our first chase, we're sitting there listening and someone yells that they jumped and everyone starts getting into the trucks and I'm just kind of standing around like, what's going on? And the guy who I'm riding with is like, well, get in the van.
Get in the van.
So yeah, definitely took me a little while to learn some of the lingo and what that all exactly meant.
How, when you first walked into that first tree, you know, with all the dogs barking and I mean, there's a lot of energy there. Being new and not around that, I mean, is anxious or do you remember what that was like?
For me, it was a little bit. So our first chase we had, so they have like the bait sites that we run off of generally. We had like a 450 pound bear on camera that we were running. And that's the year that I had my kill tag and we were on it for a long, long time. And, it was kind of starting to look like it was going to be a loss. And then the dogs, they didn't rig that one. I think we just saw that one cross. Yeah. That one of the guys as we were sitting watching just saw a bear cross the road and they're like, well, let's put a bear in a tree today. And he knew it was a smaller bear. So yeah. Going in, I wasn't as nervous because I knew I wasn't going to shoot it, but I was just excited to see a bear in a tree. And I told the guys like after that experience, you know, seeing the excitement at the tree, seeing the dogs just like gung ho, and all that, I told them, I said, I've waited, you know, 12 years for this tag. I've been thinking about this day ever since I was 12. And like, if I don't get a bear, this experience was to go into the tree was worth it enough to me to like, I'll come back next year without a tag. And I'm going to come back every year if you let me until I get another tag. So,
yeah,
I got a weird question, like, because I know you come from big game hunting and turkey hunting and whatnot. Was it easier for you to take? Because if you're talking about the bear in that video, it wasn't like real small, but I mean, it wasn't what you're looking for in a 10-year draw tag for sure. It was probably what, 150, 100.
The one I killed ended up being 216.
That was two. Yeah. I knew it went over 250, but that first one, was it easier for you to walk away from that with an awesome experience than like, let's say a marginal buck, like, is he good enough? Is he not? Like, where was your confidence level after seeing that first one of like, yeah, we're going to hold off and keep going? Because a lot of guys don't hold off.
So it's very different for me because like I don't know when they're looking at these bears, like I would say I could guess within 75 pounds, but I don't – it's harder for me to tell. Like if I see a 200-inch buck, I know that's a 200-inch buck. If I see a 400-pound bear, I just know that's a bigger bear like than what I normally see. And I was, you know, they don't shoot sows, but they choose not to. and they don't have any like weight restrictions necessarily, but I told them like I'd like a decent, you know, I'd like a respectable bear for this unit in Wisconsin. And I was also surprised, I guess I could be totally wrong if someone wants to fact check me, but the average bear in Wisconsin is like 135 or 140. I want to say, which shocked me. I mean, we have a couple big ones killed every year, but I said, you know, don't let me shoot, especially because it was the first day. Don't let me shoot something that's not, you know. So I felt, I don't know, I felt fine about it. I was feeling confident because there's seemed like there's plenty bear around, and they have like 100% almost success rate. The only times they don't end up filling tags is when guys are like, no, I want a 350, and they don't happen to treat a 350. So I guess I felt pretty good about it. And it's like, I got to see the bear in the tree. I got to see it come down and run away. I didn't feel any like, man, I wish I would have killed that bear. I was just as happy to just get to witness it. You know, that's the closest I've ever been to a bear.
How's that sound when they climb out of the tree?
That in the video, in my video, you can hear me go, I'm scared.
Like, yeah, you never forget it when you hear that one time, like, especially when you got one crawling out right on top of you, you never forget that sound, man.
Yeah, this last year, so I've gotten to see a couple more bears come down, and that's a different story, but I kind of had to box out a bear in a ditch 2 years ago.
That sounds like a great story for right now.
Well, we were on this bear, and it was a mean bear. It was a rough hunt, and this is like the type of things that I definitely don't want to show in a video necessarily, but the bear was fighting with some dogs, and it was just a rough hunt, and there was a guy who did have a kill tag in camp that day, and the bear was about to go cross into this terrible section that is just an ab. There's no access to it. It's swampy. It sucks. And we get there, and the guy's like, he told me, screw your camera, like, go fight that bear in the ditch. Don't let him get across the road. And I've learned a lot of terms, but I don't know what that fight that bear in the ditch means. So I just ran up there, and I'm like,
let's go.
I just ran in there, and like the dogs are pushing it towards the road. I'm in between the road and the bear, probably, I don't know, 10 feet away. And I'm trying to like kind of catch dogs and spin them around to shoot them the other way. And that was
Say, hey, bear? Those are the magic words. Hey, bear, hey, bear.
I was yelling a lot of things. I don't know what they were.
It wasn't hey, bear, was it?
I was hollering, and I had a GoPro on my chest. There was so much adrenaline going on, I completely forgot to turn it on. But that was that story. And then last year, we had another bear that treed, and it wouldn't come down, and it was way up in this tree. It looked like actually a pretty big bear. And I told all the guys, take the dogs, get out of here. I want to try to get footage of this bear coming down the tree. And this one didn't end up making it to the video because I turned and ran away like just a little sissy. But the bear came all the way down, almost all the way down the tree to where it was like 4 feet off the ground. And I'm probably 10 feet from the base of the tree. And it looked at me, and it smacked its paw against the tree and like jacked its jaws at me. And I just turned and bailed.
He's like, I'm out.
Yeah. So Joe's like signed up and ready to go next time and go fight the bear, right?
I think I probably got, I think I'm at 5 points right now. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think like 8 to 10 typically gets it done where we're at. So I got a couple years yet to get up there and maybe run with some guys and screw up a bunch and I really enjoy, kind of going back, grew up grouse hunting and stuff, in northern Wisconsin. And then I really enjoy just like learning new ways of doing things. So getting into the waterfowl space, we work with a local trainer here for my dog. And I told him like the training the dog's probably going to be easy. You got to teach me what the hell to do. So, cause I had never run a retriever before. And, I would imagine, hunting with hounds is very, very similar where it's just a totally new world and you just gotta kind of open yourself up to it and, hope that you got people with you that are gonna legitimately coach you up and not just make you look stupid and all that stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It's kind of different, you know, like you, when you're talking about like the houndsmen and hounds and they're really dedicated and we spend so much time out there with the dogs and in these situations and you get to see so much and it's hard to on somebody new sometimes coming in. It's like, you know, we've just got a system down and sometimes it's like, oh yeah, like get in the truck, you know what I mean? Or they're jumped. Everybody knows what to do. And the new guy's sitting there on the thing like, hey, what do you mean? Like jump.
Where's everybody going?
But it's exciting and, you know, we have to, open ourselves up to new people and new experiences and stuff like that. Cause, otherwise we're a dying breed. I mean,
yeah.
I always joke. I like being out in the woods without people. I live in the mountains. That'd be fine with me, but at some point we've got to come into town and we've got to reconnect and bring new people to society and good photos and good videos that aren't showing us in a negative light and stuff like that or good stuff. So
yeah, and that's something Zach and I talk about a lot. We are extremely deliberate. You know, there's things that happen while we're hunting. I mean, I'll use bird hunting for example. Like you might have to ring a bird's neck or something like that. Like every hunter knows that takes place in a hunt, but we don't need to show it. Because, you know, everyone that is with you knows it's going on. So it's not really adding anything for them. But, you know, you're just potentially giving the wrong people a little screen grab of something, you know, quote unquote wrong going on. And, you know, next thing you know, you just gave them more ammunition for, you know, completely misinterpreting what's going on. That's something we're really deliberate about. You know, there's certain stuff that doesn't make the cut because we think it's gonna, you know, I don't want to say it would shed a bad light on the situation, but you know, we want to make sure that we're
it changes the narrative. I mean, even if you would take this this Wyoming wolf deal, you know, that's all over right now, and I mean the antis are definitely using that situation and painting a strong narrative about it and trying to make changes right now, like law changes and stuff. And it's just a bad deal right now. And it's because, I mean, I don't know, Jason, you heard that?
I haven't.
There's a guy out of Wyoming that, I don't know if he ran it. A wolf,
he ran it
whatever.
Over with a snowmobile or something.
Yeah, hit it with a snowmobile. And then instead of dispatching it like he should have, I mean, I hands down should have just shot the wolf, but he taped its mouth and brought it into a bar and tried to hang out with him in the bar for him. And then I think he may have shot it or whatever. But anyways, those pictures are just going ballistic on anti-hunting forums, emails. I mean, every day I'm getting an email alert, you know, sent to me about, you know, Project Coyote or, you know, wild animal justice or whatever, you know, whatever. Every single anti-hunting organization right now is rallying their troops to raise money. Number one, that's the first thing they're asking for is, hey, we need to get money to fight these horrible things. And number two, they're asking people to call Wyoming Fish and Game and all that and try and change laws right now. And so it's just a simple, stupid video that changes the narrative. And so that's just really important. It's frustrating sometimes.
Yeah. And with someone,
and I am no wolf lover. Like I want that wolf dead. You know, in Wyoming, I believe he could have just shot it and it would have been like no big deal, but.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I feel like most hunters would agree that person really screwed up. But they got lumped into the hunters category, and now it gives everyone a bad name, even though no one likes that guy. So,
I wouldn't even consider that a hunting incident. You know, that was just something completely different. And obviously, I think it gets lumped in with everything else. But even simple stuff, like there's things that go on in the hunting world, like, I don't know, bow hunting for instance, like every bow hunter knows if you shoot a deer and you see blood pumping out both sides, that's a perfect shot. That's exactly what you're trying to do. it's the most ethical way to do what we're doing. But for someone that like doesn't know any better, even someone that's not an anti-hunter, right, like anything that could, unless you take the time to explain, like, hey, I get to someone who isn't familiar with this life, like why this might make you feel a little queasy if you're not used to it, but this is why we do it. If you take the time to explain, that makes sense. But sometimes in videos, like, I don't want to sit there and explain why you have to wring a bird's neck to someone that, you know, like Joe said, we all know you don't have to show it. It just,
and they don't always give you the time. Like, you don't get a chance for a rebuttal. You have one step to put forward.
Yep.
And after that, I mean, we've all had that argument 1,000 times with people from the other side, you know, and I'm not even saying anti-hunters, but people that don't know, if it's an instant turnoff, it's over. And I can appreciate that, especially because I hear a lot of contrast between like bird hunters, you know, waterfowl hunters versus like even hounds per se. They'll say, oh, well, yeah, nobody cares about a duck or nobody cares about this. It's not a big deal to show shooting ducks. But then for some reason, shooting bears is like a big deal to certain people or companies or, but yet there's tasteful ways to do it. And I will say, like, the fact that you're that conscious about it in a sport that has so much support behind it, like the bird dogs and waterfowlers have so much support and money behind them, and you're still that diligent and that direct in keeping things positive focused and cutting that kind of thing out. Like, I respect that a lot personally.
Yeah, that was honestly, like, in all the bear hunting videos I did, and what I appreciate, like, to me, hound hunters are on the front lines of, like, you know, you see the Facebook post that goes around all the time, like, they came for fox hunting and I did nothing because I hunt bears. They came for bear hunting and I did nothing because I hunt rabbits. They came and all of a sudden there's nothing left to hunt. Yeah. The houndsmen are definitely on the front lines of, like, that's what's getting taken away first. And I think a lot of it is due to just simple misconceptions. So, like, my whole goal with all the videos I've done is to try to paint the most positive light around it as possible. And I still have, like, one of my biggest goals would be to do like a mini documentary on like the showing the whole lifestyle, like how involved it is. Like the guys I hunt with, for example, every single day it's a grandpa, a father and a son. And so talk about like the lifestyle and then, you know, the positives of it as far as, you know, you get a better look, you know, to be more selective on the animal that you're, you know, you can make a more conscious decision on which animal you want to shoot because you get a better look at them and just all the different things you have to learn. I think it's important to, it would be really important and beneficial to talk more positively about it and get more media out there that paints it in a better light.
Yeah. I got to watch a video in Eastern Idaho. It was called Lionheart.
Yeah, you know the guys that filmed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, super good guys.
Yeah, what was the name of the company?
Blood Origin.
Land
Limited. Blood Origin.
But it was through, I believe, Blood Origins is the nonprofit that kind of pulled it all together.
But they did the video. Yeah, and they did a good job on it. It was actually really same type of thing. It really focused on the lifestyle. You know, the heritage and the amount of dedication it takes. In those instances, it was about lion dogs, you know what I mean? But, you know, and mostly dry ground lion dogs, you know what I mean? Desert dogs. They did a little bit in like snowmobile, you know, showed a little bit of different types, but the gist of it is the same. You know what I mean? It's that lifestyle. It's, you know, we're not doing this for the one day. We got to do it for the life so that we have the tools to be able to perform when we need to perform. And so it was interesting, and I hope it does good. You know, sitting in the room, I kind of was looking around at different people watching the movie, and it was in a loud cafeteria, so it was hard to kind of hear and stuff like that. Sure. But I'm torn between, I mean, it definitely resonated with me, you know what I mean? And I have that mission. I understand the mission, the importance of the messaging and stuff like that. But I'm also a really analytical guy. And so I'm looking around the room and looking at other people who may not understand the mission. You know, maybe it was some kid's girlfriend that came with it and she doesn't quite know the hounds as much or whatever. You know, I'm trying to find people in the room that are not dedicated houndsmen, I guess would be right. The best way of saying it. And they weren't locked into the movie. You know what I mean? So that was the part where I was like, I hope it hits the right people. You know what I mean? Because I don't need to hear the message. I already get the message. You know what I mean?
So, we appreciate it, but we need to get the word out to the fringe.
I need to get it. We need it to the non-hunting public, and we need something. And that's the challenging part is we can make something cool for us. We look at it and go, oh man, that's a really killer video, you know? But we got to get their attention first. And today's world, getting their attention is pretty difficult. So
yeah, extremely difficult.
I'm curious the challenge that I'm just not sure. We'll see. But they're supposed to premiere that, I think, August.
Okay. Yeah, August 27th, I think.
In Denver. So I'm really kind of curious to see how that goes, because that was the same type of messaging. It's like, yeah, getting the message out. So
yeah.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about your guys' product now. Like I said, I want to dive into a little bit about the nutrition. You guys are going to be sponsoring the podcast. So yep. That's pretty much we've been looking for a few months ago. Me and Jason were talking about wanting to find, and we don't want to heavily advertise this podcast. So there'll be hosts that we have, and they may have their own advertisers and stuff like that. But as far as the whole platform, W Hunt Supply is going to be a podcast. They kind of sponsored. We got the steering wheel. Okay. Yeah. So, but we were looking for a partner to go with us that, wasn't another hound supply company. You know what I mean? We had a couple rules to fit the seat, you know what I mean? And your guys's setup definitely fits the seat. So I think I called and I was asking, who was I talking to at first? When I called, I just called and was asking some questions about your company. And number one, about there were some business questions I had for, you know, if we're going to offer a product to sell, I got, you know, what's the margins and what's, you know, the supply chain and those types of questions I had. And what I found out was he was just really transparent. Like sometimes people guard information when you're asking, you know, talking in business, and it's like, dude, don't hide it from me. Like, I know, you know what I mean? Not everything's perfect, but I know, you know, I've been in business enough to know that, you know, the questions I'm asking are pretty simple. You know the answers to it. And so the fact that he didn't try to hide information and mostly about, I gave you an example. If you call somebody and go, hey, what is your wholesale cost or whatever? A lot of guys or companies are like, well, we can't tell you that until your account. And he wasn't like that. And so I appreciated that. It was really good. It was a really open conversation. And anyways, it progressed into offering you guys the sponsorship slot for us, and we're going to call this the co-title, and you guys are going to sponsor all of our podcasts for the platform for at least a year. And we're excited about that. Part of that's going to be, we're going to bring on, I've been looking for a nutrition company to bring on because I feed a little bit of nutrition. I do a joint supplement. And so Alpha Dog is, you know, that glucosamine. I want you to talk a little bit about that. I've been feeding glucosamine for a while. You know what I mean? Like, and so I'm happy that a year and a half ago, I was talking to you guys, and I didn't like the powder.
Yep.
I was like, I don't like the powder. I want the chew toy. I want the gummy worm, you know, the gummy.
Yeah.
And I've fed those, little, what do they call them? Soft chews.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I've fed those. I got them from Chewy for so long. I finally switched over to the powder, and I can tell you my reservations. I don't know that I'd go back to a Chewy now that I've used the powder. it is actually easier to you know, figure out which dog. The other thing I found out was that I was stingy on my feedings because the bottle said two per dog. And I was like, nah, I'm not giving two.
You get one.
You get one. You know, like, you only get one. You only get half of what they say because I want this bottle to last longer. And I don't do that with the powder. I actually give them the right dosage with the powder because I don't feel like I'm.
You're not counting grains or what?
I'm not counting.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It,
well, and that's weird. Something that is, you know, we're always going to do what is first and foremost best for the dog. So like we get a ton of referrals from people that we just flat out tell, like they might have a certain issue they're working through with their dog and we'll just straight up tell them like, we don't have a product that can help you, if right. that's the case. And I think they really appreciate that because I think so many people are used to just being sold something, whether they need it or not. And I know we get a ton of referrals from that. My wife, Angela, handles all the customer service and everything. So pretty small team still and everything. But yeah, the soft chews, we pretty much made the commitment that we're not going to ever go that route because, I mean, I compare it to putting protein powder on a donut and calling it a health food. Like it's just so much junk that you need to actually make the physical soft chew. And typically the dosages of the quote unquote good stuff, are super low in those. We're proud to say we have like some of the higher dosages in the industry, for that good stuff. And we proudly have like the smallest jars, in the industry because we don't use all the additives and fillers and fluff that, you know, quite frankly are only there to, you know, make someone feel like they're getting more bang for their buck, even though they're not. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So what, so tell us a little bit about your joint supplement.
Yeah.
And let's start with that one.
Yeah. So our joint supplement's called Free Range. That was one of the products that we kind of founded the company on back in, 2017, but,
that's your starting product. That's what you started with.
Yep. One of the three. So, that's got glucosamine, chondroitin and MSM in it, which are kind of like, if you're looking at joint supplements, those are kind of the big three. A lot of brands will skimp on chondroitin because that costs more than like the rest of the supplement combined. You know, it's a powder food topper, beef liver flavored with real beef liver. Yeah, that's easily our number one product.
Yeah. So I had a dog and what kind of got me tied into the joint supplements was, I had a red dog and, it had, we don't really know what happened, but it must've got on our trampoline or something as a young dog and it was whatever. And I forget what tendon it was. I think it's called like, it's like the ACL in a dog, but it's a tendon they don't use. Right. And so it snapped, it actually cleanly snapped that tendon off. And, I mean, we thought, well, shoot, we're going to have to put the dog down or something. You know what I mean? It was just painful. It wasn't hurt or, it couldn't walk on that leg or whatever. After a couple, we took it to one vet here local and they didn't know. And then they referred us to another vet that had heard something about it. Actually a vet out of, Corvallis. And so we drove down to Corvallis and she called in an expert on that. And anyways, long story short, those dogs don't use the tendon that it snapped. I mean, it was a clean snap. I mean, it just broke that tendon. And, so they're like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut everything up and we're going to snip out the tendon. So they just cut the tendon so it's clean instead of being like frayed from snapping. And then you got to let the dog heal up for like, you know, 2 months or something. It was a long healing process, but it was a pretty invasive surgery. And of course, as a houndsman, I'm like, dude, you don't understand it. This dog can't hunt. I don't want to say it can't live here, but it's not good for me. Like this dog's going to be miserable every time I take my other dogs out if it can't go with me. Like I don't want to be the type of guy that puts a dog down, but I'm like, this dog probably should be put down if it's not able to hunt, or I got to find some family that it could be a house dog with. Anyways, they assured me the dog doesn't use these tendons, you know, when they run or whatever. But she needs to be like on a glucosamine. She needs to be on like a good joint supplement for the rest of her life or whatever. And because of, you know, her age and her arthritis, all that kind of stuff, they said that she's going to see arthritis a little bit earlier in life than others. And that's what's happening right now. But, so anyways, glucosamine and these joint pills were definitely what was recommended. And that's kind of how I got tied into feeding these joint supplements and watching her recover from it. I mean, I can clearly see that it's helpful for her. So that's where I've come into, got my buy-in on this joint supplement was all because of this stupid red dog that was jumping on a trampoline.
Yeah. We
party.
Probably one of my favorite like customer stories. We have and it's actually how I got hooked up with my trainer for my dog, but he had a dog named Thor that tore his ACL. And he happened to, you know, find our product and they did the surgery. I mean, I will always lead with, you know, if a dog recovers well, like your red dog and like Thor, I mean, nutrition plays a role, but I mean, if that dog fully recovers, that means you did something right. And, yeah. You know, I'm going to definitely get the timeline wrong here. But it was like a year or so later after the surgery. He brings him into the vet and they do x-rays and stuff. And the vet's like, I can't tell this was ever torn, which is, you know, not normal. So, right. He bought in hook, line and sinker after that and, has been a great, great kind of ambassador for our brand, you know, kind of telling that story and everything. But, I think we even rank like one or two on Google for like dog supplements for torn ACLs and stuff like that. So I look at joint supplements. I kind of compare them to taking care of your truck. If you change your oil on time and do all that preventative maintenance, it's going to probably treat you significantly better down the road. You know, accidents still happen. Things still break. But you know.
I don't know if that's a good pitch to the helm guys. you just lost a lot of guys, including myself. Like, well, nope. I need to change the oil on my truck, and I ran it through the. I got glass replaced on my glass yesterday, and the guy's like, "Do you want OEM glass?" I'm like, "No." It was like $670 for four glass or $379. I'm like, "I'll take two of the other ones, please." You know, just put it on my bill. Make an appointment for next, you know, in a couple months.
Just hold that one in the back till I need it.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, too, like time slips away because I'll be honest, I'm not one that has fed a lot of supplements, you know, to my dogs over the years until they got older, you know.
Yep.
But now I'm looking at my dogs that are, you know, 5 turning 6. They're really in their prime. And I'm thinking, no, we got to start something now because I remember that last batch of dogs, I didn't start until they showed signs of needing some help. Yeah. And then, you know, that age from 8 to 10, man, that was a rough 2 years on a dog.
Yep.
Where right now it's like, you know, a year ago, these dogs seemed like they were 2, you know, and now we're knocking on 6 and it's like, holy cow. I want to get the most I can out of a dog, not just in its performance, but being able to train and continue training puppies because, well, you've seen it, you know, the time involved in the daily lifestyle, our time with these good dogs is too short, you know, like how, what if Copper was 15 years old? When did he die, buddy? He was pretty old, wasn't he?
She. Yeah. Copper and Penny. 13 maybe. I mean, it was, they were pretty done. I wasn't feeding with, I wasn't doing joint supplements with them either. I think I've honestly seen a better response and recovery. And it's hard because I'm not a big sales guy. Like I don't, you know, I'm skeptic by nature. And so, but I do see the recovery happening better. You know what I mean? Like I can hunt them at the age I'm hunting them. And I don't want to say that they don't act like 5-year-old dogs. You know what I mean? I don't want to pretend like, oh yeah, you just turn a 9-year-old into a 4-year-old. It's like, no, that don't happen. And I don't want the 4-year-olds sometimes. I like the 9-year-olds because they just,
6 is really good.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, if I can get the 6-year-old, that's what I really want. But I can see the difference if I haven't been or whatever, those older dogs, they just aren't ready to go again, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you get some extra life out of them.
Yeah. I call it the sucker punch, where somewhere in that 6 to 8 year old range, you just kind of wake up one day and for whatever reason, you kind of realize you're now closer to the end than the beginning. You know, that's, I would imagine a vast majority of our customers come to us after that realization, because I mean, you put so much into a dog, you know, both in terms of training and just like, you know, mental capacity, they're part of your family, all that stuff. And it's really tough watching them get old. I mean, I don't care how many dogs you've had, having to put a dog down is not fun. You know, watching those back hips go, because typically that's what goes first, is really tough to watch. So we try to set them up to get as much wear and tear out of those back hips as they possibly can. And hopefully we do a good enough job.
Yeah.
Something I think we like to say is like an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. And a lot of times, because you're spending every day with this dog, like you're seeing a daily progression of, you know, whether they're just limping just a tad more that day, until one day you look back and go, boy, that dog does not look like it did last year.
Right.
So that I think is like the power of that joint supplement. The other thing is like fatigue driven injuries. Like a lot of times the big things occur when a dog is really sore, limping, and, you know, favoring one side over the other. That's another big help too. If your dog is feeling better every day and running better and running healthier, it's going to be less likely to occur like a severe cruciate injury. So,
yeah. And that's a challenging with the hounds. There's a lot, I don't know how to say this without sounding like we're the hardest guys out there in the woods or whatever, but
for the best there is.
Yeah. I piss excellence.
Right.
For
it's brutal.
Yeah. Like to catch, you know, I'll use a lion or a bobcat in some situations. If you're doing a cold trail, you know what I mean? Like you might have to cold trail all day. You know what I mean? Hours and hours and hours. And then you've got to do a sprint race at the end of that. You know what I mean? And a lion may not be there, like a bobcat or something, or a lynx would be a good example. Like I've had lynx hunts where, oh, that thing is just spinning and spinning and spinning. And you're on your third day or fourth day, the dogs are done. I mean, they are done. They don't want to, I don't want to say they don't want to go because they're always willing to go. But when they come out, they're like, oh, this again? Okay. Let's get the kinks out. Let's start. And they start trailing and they get the jump and they get on a hard cat. And there's a moment in the race. There's a time there that me hunting these older dogs, you know what I mean? That I'm like, do they got the gas on this one? You know what I mean? Do they got, they're spent right now. I can hear it in their voices. They're a little bit like, damn it. Like, I don't want to work this hard, but I do want to catch this thing. And it amazes me what they pull out of their hat sometimes to be like, they found third gear. You know what I mean? They had to go through, they were grinding, but they did what they needed to do to put that critter up in the tree. And you're right. I mean, those are situations that, you know, their injuries and stuff like that can occur. I mean, I got a dog that whenever that happens, she curls up and lays down and right by a tree, you know, so by the time I get there to the tree, she's damn near sleeping. She's curled up, that red dog. And she's like, I did my job, take a picture, whatever. And then we'll head back out of here and you're going to give me an extra hot dog tonight. You know what I mean? Or whatever it is. But, yeah, that like, I totally appreciate what you're saying there and I see it. And I don't think a lot of people understand the amount of effort that a hound has to do sometimes to catch difficult animals. I'm not saying you can't go out and pop up an easy one or anything like that. I'm, you know, those happen. I'm talking the grind. I'm talking right. the ones that you're like 50-50 chance if we're going to do this or not, you know, or whatever. When you're looking at a hard one and you're like, this one might get away or this one won't get away. And the difference is in the dogs finding that extra gear, I think, and recovering.
Well, yeah, think that's about something that I came back from my first hunt and told Joe, like, or I think when I first started, I was like, dude, if there's any dog in the world that needs to be on free range and resurgence, it's a hound dog. I mean, one of our chases was 18 miles through some of the, I mean, over rolling hills and then down into wet swamps. And I mean, it's like, can you imagine going through that amount of effort and then waking up the next morning and doing it all over again?
Right.
I just said, like, this, we have to address this more, like, more clearly to where it makes sense to how beneficial yep. this could potentially be. So
think about yeah. how it affects us. Like, when do we make mistakes? When you're tired, yep. when you're wore out, when your muscles are, you know, given out. I have a back injury that I fight. When I'm fresh, it's not a big deal. When I'm tired and I'm coming down slopes and my body's hurting, God, that's when I feel it. And I feel like that's where the benefit of a product like this, you know, yeah. to help them through that. That I've just noticed, I get a lot more dogs injured on the last run of the night than you do on the first run, you know, or as they're getting tired, their drive is going to overdrive their self-preservation. Like, hands down, yep. that dog does not care. It's going to keep going as hard as it can, as long as it can. So anything we can do to help them is, it's just adding years, you know, adding time, adding experience.
Yeah. So you're saying resurgence is a recovery?
Yeah. Zach, you want to take that one?
Yeah, resurgence is like a rehydration recovery supplement. It can be used a variety of different ways. It's just like free range, where you can, you know, put it on your dog's food after a hard day of training or hunting. Something that I do when running upland hunts, halfway through the hunt, I'll like preload a water bottle with resurgence in it to kind of give like a mid hunt boost. I'm a camera guy, not a scientist. Someone who explained this to me, I can try to explain, but it like a part of it is it replaces their glycogen tank. Joey, maybe you know more about like that actual part of it than me, but when dogs are running, you know, they can pull from, like, the first thing they pull is glycogen. That's like kind of like the rocket fuel. Then they pull from fat and or protein, and the resurgence allows that glycogen tank to like kind of refuel faster, which is like their main source of pulling energy. So, I mean, I see it. I mean, my dogs are quartering back and forth in easy battles. It's nothing like a lynx chase, but they get tired after going through the cattails and through the long grass, and halfway through the hunt, after I give them that resurgence, I definitely notice, like, all right, they're slowing down, give them that, and there seems to be like another uptick in their hunt, in their pace. And then, you know, at the end of the day, if it's a long day and we're going to hunt again in the morning, I'll definitely feed it that night as well.
So what's it come with? Helps.
What's in what products or whatever? What
is there's electrolytes in there. So I kind of compare it to a cross between like a, you know, liquid IV type powder, mm-hmm. and you know, like recovery type supplement. So there's electrolytes in there that obviously does a good job rehydrating them and all that stuff. You know, the basically it's, even if you're feeding it dry on food, it's going to basically make them want to drink more water, and then they're going to retain it better when they do. And then there's amino acids and stuff to try to kind of help. I'm always careful to say we're not trying to like bulk a dog up. We're not trying to make a dog absolutely jacked, because that's a lot of times can end up causing more issues than anything. But we're trying to rebuild that muscle, you know, all those little tiny tears that you get, when you exercise, we're trying to kind of rebuild that so that, you know, like someone was saying it before, but like, you know, when you get tired, your joints and everything are now working at kind of weird angles because your form's not quite as good. And it's just, you know, it's not like you're guaranteed an injury, but at some point you're kind of asking for trouble. So, the goal is basically to kind of help them bounce back as quickly as possible. And that's a fun product too, because we have a lot of guys that go out to the Dakotas and stuff like that, you know, where they're hunting a bunch of dogs, and the supplement industry, for good reason, has a lot of skeptics out there, just based on how companies have kind of advertised in the past and things like that. And I mean, we just tell people, like, we have a 60-day empty bottle guarantee. Put half your dogs on it, keep half the dogs off of it, and you tell me which dogs are running harder at the end of the week. And without fail, it's the ones that were on resurgence. So that's always really fun to see.
And what's the dosage? I didn't ask about the free range and the.
Yeah. So our servings are typically going to be big, and we've got instructions on the jar and everything, mm-hmm. for, you know, if it's a bigger or smaller dog, but our servings are pretty much planned on like a 55-pound dog. You know, free range, I'm not try rattling these off. I may get the actual numbers wrong, but it's got like 700 milligrams of glucosamine. I think 600 of MSM and 300 of chondroitin, which, I mean, I always happily say, like, compare our label to anyone else's. Like, it's, right. We're going to come out on top there. So, yeah.
And what's the size? What size of scoop are you?
Yeah, so it's a 3cc scoop. People are, I would say, our biggest, like, negative feedback is people that kind of get a little bit of shock when they get the bottle and it's not a very big bottle and you're not really giving the dog all that much. And our kind of response to that is like, well, think about this. So we have a higher dosage than the soft chews, where you're needing to give 4 to 6 to a dog to get the same amount of thing. And like, we only need this much, and everyone else, you're needing to give like a pile of soft chews. Those additives and fillers and everything, really, they, at best, they aren't doing anything good for your dog. At worst, you're talking about extra calories, introducing like allergies and things like that. It's just, there's no need for it. So, yeah.
And then what about the resurgence? What's the scoop size on that?
Yeah, so that's a little bit larger scoop. I believe that one's a 4cc scoop. So still pretty small. It doesn't take a lot. Like Zach was saying, you can either feed it dry on your dog's food. You can float your dog's food if you want. And then we have a lot of guys that'll put it in a water bottle and basically give that to their dog throughout the hunt if they're carrying water and stuff. So.
Another thing,
would you just say in the water, float your feed?
Yeah, float their food. So, like, basically, if you have a bowl of dry dog food, and you basically fill it up with water as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So. And another thing about the resurgent, like my dog Harley in particular, she will not drink water during a hunt. She just wants to hunt. With that flavor of the beef liver, it also actually, like, if you got a dog that doesn't drink as much as they should, the flavor alone will just, like, get them to drink the water. Then there's obviously all those extra things in there that help out. But, yeah, it's a 3.5 grams, Joe. I looked it up, so I think 4 cc's.
For okay. Students. Yeah.
Cool.
So not a lot. I mean, really, like, oh. I've used powder products in the past. You know, I've used, like,
compared to a teaspoon, what's a teaspoon?
Hey Siri, all of us are reaching for our phones.
Not me. I'm like, well, I'm just trying to get an idea of what
we're professional around here, boys.
0.69 grams in a teaspoon. A 4 cc scoop is 3.5 grams.
So less than one.
So it's less than a teaspoon.
Yeah. Teaspoon is just under 5 cc's. So for free range, we're just over half a teaspoon. Just a hair on. Gotcha. So,
which is nice, because my always worry before was like, that's so dang much powder. Like, you had to rely on the dogs to like lick what fell through the dog feed.
Yep. Know? Yeah. And that's something that it's kind of interesting. I totally just lost my train of thought there. But it's kind of interesting to see, you know, just it's fun to see people realize, like, go from being a little annoyed that they got a small bottle and then realize, like, oh, I actually paid for like only what I need, and not all this extra fluff. So, because the huge jars and stuff, that's there for the person. That's not there for the dog. So,
And one jar has about 30.
Yeah. 30. So, Free Range has 45 servings per jar. I'm honestly not quite sure how we landed on that number, but it's got 45 servings. Resurgence has 30 servings. The difference between the two, you know, Resurgence you would really only give after a big day of activity, where Free Range is going to be like a once daily type stuff. Because it's basically, there's been a bunch of studies on it. It has to have elevated levels of those big three, the glucosamine, chondroitin, and MSM in their bloodstream to get that going, to get the benefit out of it. So,
yeah. Okay. And then the other two products that we're going to carry, give us a rundown on those two. One's the probiotic.
Yep.
And then the Vitality, I think, is the last one. So those are the three products that we're going to start with. As far as, and what I like about it is it's a pretty simple, easy, like the Free Range and the Resurgence, I think are the two I'm most interested in that I think are going to be the biggest benefit for me. But the probiotic I'm definitely interested in. A lot of times feeding, when we're dosing a dog for, you know, cephalexin or any kind of antibiotics or whatever, that's always kind of a good thing to make sure you give them probiotics. But I want to hear what your probiotic line is.
Yeah, so probiotics called Balance. That's a 30 serving jar as well, same scoop size as Free Range, so 3 cc. It's got 7 billion, they call it live organisms, per serving. So basically what that means is, like, the goal of a probiotic is basically there's good bacteria and there's bad bacteria in your gut. And the goal of a probiotic is basically overwhelm that bad bacteria in your gut with good bacteria. So it's got 8 different strains. So, you know, there's a couple products out there that have like one. If that happens to be the one that your dog needs more of, great. But we try to check a bunch of boxes with ours. I love probiotics we travel quite a bit for hunt tests and go on road trips for hunts. A lot of times your dog's drinking different water, really high anxiety environment. All of that stuff can basically add up to stomach issues. And I don't think anyone that has gone through a stomach issue, wants to wake up while they got one and be like, I'm going to go run today, you know, so,
16 miles.
So that's really what the probiotic's there for. A lot of kennels use it because, you know, it's just a higher anxiety environment. Your body's under stress, all that stuff. So that one is, I'd say, top three. That one and Vitality are probably, actually, no. Yeah, our products in terms of popularity would probably be Free Range, then Vitality, then Balance, and then Optipup or puppy supplements definitely in there somewhere as well.
Another thing with the Balance is obviously cool. Like,
so that's a probiotic.
What was that, Zach?
I was just gonna, another thing like that. I personally sometimes I feed Balance daily, but normally just like when my dogs get diarrhea, which doesn't happen often, but with diarrhea you're running into a, you know, you can really get dehydrated fast and it clears diarrhea up really quick. That's the probiotic Balance.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Vitality is basically our krill oil. So that's the one product that's a soft gel. And, you know, basically that's going to be really good for skin and coat, cardiovascular health, all that good stuff. So I really like, if people have a certain budget and they say, I want to pick two supplements I'm going to use. I really like Free Range and Vitality as kind of a 1-2 punch, because krill oil is also very good for your joints. So that's just a once daily soft gel. Some people do it in like a pill pocket type deal. I just toss it on top of my dog's food and he doesn't even realize it's there.
So when you say soft gel, like a is it a, like a tube, like a squirt tube?
Nope. So if you think about it, like those, like capsules, but the
like a fish oil capsule.
Oh, gotcha.
Yep. Yep. So, and one thing worth mentioning too, like my background's in manufacturing engineering. I live this stuff, but all of our products are formulated by, an animal nutritionist. She's got her PhD out of Auburn. So we aren't just like willy nilly making this stuff up and saying it works. There's a lot of background that goes into it, and, we're very lucky to have her. So.
Yeah. So you just contract out with your nutritionist? I mean,
So she's not full time or anything, but we kind of lean on her whenever we're, if we got a question that pops up that we aren't quite sure about, we kind of lean on her to help answer that. And then any new formulations and stuff. One thing that's kind of cool. So she typically throws us something where it's like, I'm sure this is really good for a dog, but unless someone wants to spend $300 a month on their supplements for their dog.
There's a scale, right?
Yeah. So, because we manufacture in-house, we're able to do a lot more, than someone that's going through a contract manufacturer where they've basically got, 50% or whatever it is of that product cost in just paying someone else, so we're able to use, that's how we're able to get away with the higher dosages and, a lot more ingredients and things like that. So,
yeah.
Keep it affordable.
Cool. So we'll be able to get this. These will be on W's website.
Yeah.
We really need to get we probably should get our order going. Our first order. We get the phone here. Let's get that squared away so we can get that going. Yeah. I know I had Jess working on getting some of the website stuff done, and so we have everything ready to pretty much launch on the website. It may not be fully ready. We should try to see if we can get it ready with this website. If this goes Friday, Jason, I think we can go ahead and turn it on our website. But we're just excited. This is something I haven't done for, or we haven't done for, as far as supplements or anything like that. But I've been wanting to for several years. I just didn't know which product I wanted to bring on. So we're kind of excited about it.
Yeah. We're super excited to be working with you guys. When we were talking, we know the hound market has a use for, our products, and, we have quite a few people that are houndsmen already, on our products and everything, but, it's kind of I feel like we're kind of underserving the whole hound market right now. And, working with you guys kind of gives us an opportunity to jump in head first and help out where we can. So,
yeah. Yeah. Cool. And so, Jason, anything else as we start to wrap this up? I got to get ready to go here.
I mean, I think that was the exciting part to me, is you guys are definitely from like another world when it comes to working dogs. And waterfowl has always fascinated me. The dog work, and having good friends that are handlers of bird dogs and whatnot. It's a totally different game. But you guys saw a value in what we do. Like, it wasn't like you were just coming to us trying to sell a product. You have a product that is going to serve us well because you understand what we're going through. And we're just really glad to have you guys on as a sponsor, Alpha Dog.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, they didn't come to me. I came to them. So 100%. I called because I was looking for, number one, the right product. I wanted something that I could at least say that I feed. You know what I mean? Like, I have been feeding joint supplements and glucosamine and stuff like that for 5 years now, or 6 years now. So, like, it is something that I have already bought into, and I haven't tried to sell any of that because I don't, I wasn't doing it to sell. I mean, I'm really trying to be structured in a situation that, it's like Garmin or whatever. It's like, if we have something, we want to do it because we use it. Right. And find the product first, and then we can talk about sponsorship and all that stuff second, so you know, we have this situation here where you are going to hear Alpha Dog as the sponsor, and we need to make sure we mention it, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more. I haven't talked about that for 6 years because I never needed to, and I'm not here to try to sell anybody on anything. I want people, like you said, you got that trial period, use it, learn it, see yeah. if you see the results, and just don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself. I think that's really important. But going forward, we will see that, you know, advertisements and you guys will pretty much be mentioned in every podcast. So I want to make sure
people know who you are
listening. Know what's that?
People know who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and our thing is, like, if you're not happy with it, we don't want to keep you money. So,
yeah.
At the end of the day, we'll make it right one way or another, whether it's, you know, the product worked really well. We've got some of the highest retention rates in the industry, which is really cool to see. If it doesn't work out, because every dog's a little bit different, the same as every person's a little bit different. If it doesn't work out and you're not happy, like, we'll get you your money back. So give us a shot, and pretty confident that things are going to work out from there.
Awesome. All right, Joe, Zach, anything else before we wrap it up?
No, thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah, when you get over, you do a cat hunt or a bear hunt, let's get back together and bring your camera over on the west side.
Yeah, we'll have States. To line something up for that maybe this fall. That'll be
be
good.
All right, perfect, guys.
Thank you. All right.